Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, let's talk about the legacy of one of your predecessors as mayor, which used to be, of Springfield, Theodore DeMauro. Would you like to say anything about what he leaves?
Well, I think he was substantial in terms of helping to rebuild the downtown. And I thought that I was a member of the city council at that time. And I thought that there were many decisions that were taken that were very helpful to the city, and including Central High School, the reconstruction of what was called the old Municipal Auditorium into Symphony Hall. And I think we began a series of very important discussions and debates about what the city was to look like. And I think that he certainly, like a series of mayors through that time, played a very important role in what I, in retrospect, were some very good days for Springfield.
When a colleague dies, what lives on?
Well, I think it's always very difficult because you, as an executive, I think at the local level, an experience that the two of us shared, you walk past a building and you say, but for a decision that I made that nobody remembers, that building wouldn't be standing there.
Interesting.
And I think there's a psychological gratification that one derives, even though the context of the argument is long lost and past. And the truth of the matter is that it's very difficult to resurrect those memories other than for a small coterie of people who lived through those very difficult decisions. And that's an experience we share. And I also think that former mayors are a very small alumni association, and generally mayors find great difficulty trying to move to another office, largely because of the decisions that they've had to make that have been hands-on. And frequently, the people where you've done the right thing forget you did the right thing, but the people that disagreed with you, they never forget.
Let's go to immigration. How's that coming, do you think?
Well, I think that it's now probably been stymied to an extent by the idea that there are very few days left in the congressional session. I think as you and I speak, there are about 38 days left in the congressional session. And with the debate over Syria threatening to smother everything else, that means that the immigration debate will be put on the back burner. I thought as Democrats, we had a pretty good August. It's kind of this interesting alliance. It tends to be the Democratic Party and Republican business people who support immigration reform. And there is in the midst of that discussion, a pretty intransigent group in the House of Representatives that opposes any sort of immigration reform. And for those of us who are products of the immigrant experience, we think that immigrants love America, they want to work very hard, and they desire to come here not for welfare, but instead for work. And you've seen some interesting dynamics that have been lost in the argument. There are more people who have gone back to Mexico in the last year than have come to America, more than a million. President Obama, the Republicans will frequently say he's weak on the issue of immigration. He has deported more people than, I believe, Bush and Clinton combined. And he thought that, I think for purposes of credibility, he had to enforce the law while trying to change the law. And I've been very friendly with the leader of the immigration reform effort here in the House. His name is Luis Gutierrez. And he has been very good in his descriptions and arguments and advocacy on behalf of immigration reform. And when President Obama says that the guidelines for immigration are pretty simple, where he says register, learn English, and get in line, I don't know how anybody can disagree with those three statements. And it strikes me as though that is the cornerstone of the immigration reform proposal that we hopefully will be taking up. Nobody is arguing for amnesty. Nobody is arguing for preferential treatment. The argument simply is that we need to know who's inside of the country, and we need to address the issue with the idea that immigration in American history has been a very important part of not only the fabric of America, but the economic success of America.
So, Richie Neal, what is holding it up? In other words, if, in fact, the guys who are giving the money to the Republican candidates to run for office want this reform, in other words, Republican businessmen, as well as Democrats, is it just the fear of being primaried or Lou Dobbed, as they say, as a verb, when they come up for office, that they were soft on immigration?
It's an interesting argument that you raise, and I'll tell you why, because the evidence is completely contrary to what the opponents are saying. And if you read, for example, as I do every day, the Wall Street Journal, you can see where the Journal has outlined on its editorial page and through its news pages a very cogent argument in support of immigration reform, largely based upon the advocacy that's been offered by the business class in America. And they're not looking just for low-income workers. They're also looking for more engineers. They're looking for more doctors. They're looking for more technical support people. And the understanding that in many of the great success stories of innovation that we've had in the last few years, the individuals have been foreign-born. And the H-1B visa, for example, is also a very important part of this consideration. That provides us with the engineers that we need, and it provides us, again, with people who have great technical capacity. So I'm at a bit of a surprise stage by the nature of the opposition, because it is largely been from rural parts of the South and the Midwest, even though in a place like Iowa, the meatpacking houses now are almost entirely staffed by people who have come to the country legally and illegally. The other part of the argument I think that's frequently missed here is that the opponents of immigration reform will frequently point out that there are 11 million people in the country illegally. Well, that may be correct to this extent that they are here and shouldn't be, but more than one quarter of those individuals they came here legitimately on visas and didn't go back.
Hmm.
That's something that's very often missed.
Yeah.
They stayed, and they came here through a legal capacity only to discover that they were able to weave themselves into the American economy, and the result was they stayed on.
I got 3 minutes. Nobody knows more than you do, Ways and Means and a top ranker there. What are we to believe about the economy? Is it doing well?
I think it's really a story that's yet to be written, largely because you need economic growth on a quarterly basis to be north of 3%. We have witnessed now, for the better part of the last 6 or 7 years, very tepid economic growth. There are parts of the economy that are certainly doing better. Housing is one example. Banks are in such a much better position at the community level, for example, for lending money to prospective entrepreneurs. You can see that the jobs picture is okay, but not good. You need 200,000 jobs a month just to keep pace with those who retire, die off, and those who leave the workforce. So the economic growth that we've been seeing has really been hovering around that 1.8 to 2.5%. And I know that this is a conversation for the Federal Reserve Board and others, but the truth is interest rates remain very, very low. American businesses are sitting on up to $1 trillion in cash. And then if you add another $1 trillion offshore, waiting to figure out what to do with that money to make it turn it into a productive capacity, all of those things are hanging out there. But not to miss the point that there's been a slowdown in China. There's been a slowdown in India. European Union is now, they seem to be doing much better than they were, climbing out of their morass. And I think all of these items are just waiting, like the conductor of a great orchestra, to be put into the form of a symphony. But at the moment, that still is not something that's happening to the extent that we would like it to.
I got a minute. So what would you like to see done to make it happen?
Well, I think a big infrastructure program is where we ought to start. The country's highways, railroads, bridges, and airports are in disrepair. I think clearly expanding community college opportunity. You've got a terrific one right at Berkshire Community College. And I think the state college system, MCLA, is another example that comes to mind. I think more opportunities for people who are outside the workforce to reestablish their skills, to upgrade their skills. And I also think, let me be so bold as to say, I think proceeding with the European Trade Agreement makes some sense. You know, the expansion of the Panama Canal is about to transform the East Coast in America. All of these items are awaiting that conductor again and for the orchestra. And I think that the opportunity to grow this economy, considering the energy opportunity that's in front of us, where the changes on that front are extraordinary, almost revolutionary. So I think there's a chance to really grow this economy if we do it the right way.
Richie Neal, thank you so much for being with us. And it's always so great to hear you lay it all out for us, because I don't think there's anybody who does it better. It's the teacher in you, isn't it?
I'd like to think of that.
And when we come back, we'll talk some more. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.